Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Crude oil transport is making headlines this week. The developer of the Keystone XL oil pipeline has taken its first steps in Nebraska since the state's high court cleared the way for the planned route. Meanwhile, a cancer-causing component of oil has been detected in the drinking water supply of an eastern Montana city just downstream from a crude oil spill that entered the Yellowstone River. Up to 50,000 gallons of oil spilled Saturday from a break in a pipeline owned by a Wyoming-based Bridger pipeline. So it's fair to say that there are a lot of environmental concerns surrounding oil transport in the United States and in polluting our river. The memory of the oil tank explosion in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, in July of 2013 is still fresh, as are the fears of similar incidents in downtown Albany and other Hudson River Valley communities as the crude makes its way to refineries in the south. We have two Riverkeeper officials here in the studio as we discuss the effects of crude oil transport in the region and of anything else that might interest you about the way we keep our rivers. Riverkeeper boat Captain John Lipscomb, he is a fascinating character, really interesting. He patrols the Hudson, and when he finds, and other places, and when he finds something, he basically has become the guy who tells the authorities, come up here and look at this thing. It's just a fascinating guy. I could listen to him for hours. And Riverkeeper Watershed Program Director Kate Hudson, and she is a lawyer, and a very brilliant one at that. John and Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's terrific that you're here. The four phones are ringing. As soon as the fifth phone rings, I'll have to stop talking to you. But John, just very quickly, tell the folks something about what you do. You're out on that river on the boat.
Yeah, well, Riverkeeper's job generally is to be the voice and an advocate for the river. The river is a magnificent living creature, and but cannot fight for itself. So the boat program is a physical connection between the organization and the river, and we're there to do whatever we can. We take scientists aboard, we take media, we look for polluters, we refer pollution cases to traditional enforcement, or we handle it with our team in-house.
And Kate, tell everybody what you do.
I am actually responsible for the New York City drinking watershed and the protection of the waters therein.
You've been heavily into fracking, haven't you?
Yes, that fell on my plate, and that's what I have been doing pretty much for the last 4 years. So I don't think I need to tell our listeners how happy we all are about the decision that was made by the governor immediately before Christmas. However, before we knew that this was going to be off the table, we hope, we were struck with the increase of crude oil traffic on the Hudson River, which came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, there was four trains a day coming down from Albany. A quarter of the crude oil coming across the country from North Dakota is going through Albany, the port of Albany, and coming down the Mid-Hudson Valley.
Wow. Okay, so we got a lot of calls. I hope you guys don't mind, and we'll take the calls. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Ken in Ticonderoga. Hi, Ken.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing what you're doing for the river. Thanks for doing what you did for New York City's watershed. Up here in the edge of the Adirondacks, you know, we got an appreciation for clean water. Most of it that goes downstate starts here clean. We give it to you clean. Let's do this. Let's leave the tar sands underneath that methane-rich permafrost, not have to worry about dragging more carloads of it across the country because we're not going to have a pipeline, and stop funding arming militants in the Middle East and start weatherizing. If we took the $500 million that we just handed off for weapons for guys to fight ISIS and put it into weatherization here, we could have weatherized 200,000 homes.
That's always the way it is, Ken. Let's go to our distinguished panel. Anybody have anything to say about this? Kate?
Well, we certainly do agree with you that it does not make any sense for this oil to be coming out of the ground. Unfortunately, there is no regulatory authority that has the power to say, stop digging it up. And there's a huge amount of economic incentive for them to do that. And so we are faced with a situation where an industry that is really only regulated at the federal level, except for the case of permits involved with terminals in Albany, the federal government has not stepped up yet to try and make this transport safer.
But doesn't the president say he's against it?
No, he has the all-of-the-above energy policy.
Right, right. But isn't there a matter of a veto, potential for a veto, if the Congress passes this on to him? I think so.
Well, that's the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
This is the transport that we're talking about, that we are focused on, Riverkeeper is
right.
focused on,
sure.
because of our regional focus,
sure.
is transport by rail and by vessel, both of which are right down the Hudson River Valley, starting in Albany, going all the way down to New Jersey and Philadelphia.
Okay. But
and
let
it's
me
the risk of that transport.
Let me interrupt, Kate. Just to play the devil's advocate, although, you, as you know, I'm on your side, the question is, don't we need oil transported? Don't we need this crude one way or another, either by pipeline or by transport?
Well, there are several responses to that question. First of all, I think you probably noticed that the price of oil and gasoline is going down. That is because the market, both the U.S. market and the world market, is being flooded with oil from the United States. Don't we need that, is the state of New York. One of the things that is clear about this transport is there is all cost and risk to New York residents and no benefit. This oil is not used, it's not sold, it's not refined, it is just passing through. And we are getting all the risk of an oil disaster and none of the financial benefit or the use of the refined oil at the end of the day.
So, John, will it happen?
Will what happen? The Keystone?
Are we going to? We're talking about two things.
Two things.
But what is Kate's concern that we're going to have an oil spill based on what's coming through? Will we have an oil spill?
We have to assume that one day we will. And so, you know, it's a significant to your caller. You know, obviously the best way to prevent a crude oil spill in New York would be to keep the oil in the ground. It has global climate considerations, but we're very local, and we have to be because that's all we can handle. So we're concerned about New York's waterways. This oil is coming by train through the Buffalo Mohawk River corridor. Some of it is loaded on barges in Albany, and some of it continues without leaving the train right down the Hudson Valley, down the estuary west side to refineries in Philly and Jersey.
And we have had train accidents.
We've been lucky in New York State. We haven't had a Lech Megantic. We haven't had a Castleton accident. We haven't had an Aliceville, Alabama accident. We haven't had a Lynchburg accident. We haven't had a Kalamazoo-type accident. So we're very lucky. And so for Riverkeeper and the coalition of groups that we work with, goal one would be to not have this product moving next to water bodies in New York State, because a spill in a water body is different.
Okay, we have to take a break. So Mark and Joanne and John, you stay right where you are. We'll be back in just seconds. And for all the rest of you, there are two free phones, 1-800-348-2551.
Comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring houseplants, seeds, and seedling starter kits, open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Closed Sundays, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. skidmore.edu/tang. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers. nature.org/Adirondacks. and Hudson Wine Merchants, Hudson, New York, celebrating 10 years of wine and food in the Hudson Valley. Raise your glass, HudsonWineMerchants.com.
And here we go. We are back with our wonderful friends from Riverkeeper, Kate and John, Captain John, Lawyer Kate, it's been a good program already. Let's go to Mark in Salem. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Hi, guys. I have my training is in earth science. I have astronomy, physics, and master's degree work in atmospheric science. And my hobby happens to be model railroading. I'm working on a model railroad. So I, but my question I promised was that I, or not question, but when they, my attitude towards dredging the PCBs out of the river, as a person coming from that point of view, when I was younger, was leave it alone, let it settle. It's been there for years.
You and GE enjoyed that position together.
Well, there was some at the time. There was some scientific thinking that they would it would break down, and there was also the research of the cancer was at that time was still kind of not 100% one way or the other, but I happen to think back when I was a young man. I spent several weekends on a place on the east side of just above Stillwater. It was a hunting club my grandfather belonged to, and as a young kid, I would go there and play in this big sandy beach.
Hey, Mark, I just want to say,
I'm going to ask you. This is the question. I developed blisters on my knees that were these large blisters, and I went to the doctor, and he the doctor Stillwater, and he said, you know, I've seen 13 cases of this this summer, and I don't know what's causing it. So my attitude changed towards the PCBs.
Interesting.
Had to come out of the river.
Okay.
I had personal experience with it.
Okay. Do either of you have a response to this?
Yeah, I have. You know, there was a lot of skepticism about whether the PCB dredging was going to be a net gain. And I don't have the exact year off the top of my head, but in about 2010 or 11, there was an extremely wet spring, and the dredging remediation had started. And what the PCB monitors in the upper Hudson above Troy found is that the PCBs resuspended in the spring runoff that year exceeded the total resuspension of PCBs by far caused by the dredging program to date. So that study addressed two questions. One, it addressed, is this stuff locked in the bottom? It's never going to move again. Those spring storms said no. And then the second question was, is the dredging going to bother the PCBs and get them back up in the water column and better to leave them alone? And the answer to that was no. And these figures come from the state officials who monitored the program. So it's clearly a benefit to the human population and the river ecosystem, and we're delighted that it's going forward.
Kate, you have something to add to this?
The only thing I would add is, given the decades of effort and money that has gone into cleaning up the Hudson River from these PCBs, it is an absolute travesty to put this river at risk again.
Yes.
The greatest risk that it has seen in a generation.
I agree.
By the oil, the crude oil transport. One spill of crude oil from a rail car or a vessel would be disastrous for this river.
Now, Kate, as long as we're talking about this, we're thinking, based on things we're hearing, that Governor Cuomo is going to propose a larger remediation effort for cleanups of oil. But you're not happy about that, are you? About the way he's doing it?
Well, this may be getting a little bit in the weeds, but the governor today has indicated that he's going to raise the cap on the oil spill fund, which is the money that the state has available to use to respond to all oil spills across the state, not just in the Hudson River, from $20 million to $25 million to $40 million.
A drop in the bucket.
A drop in the bucket. What we know is that $2 billion has already been spent on cleaning up the Lac McEntee spill. And In addition, the concern that we have is that he wants to make the oil spill response fund broaden its purpose so that it now can be used to also train and prepare communities to respond to those spills. Although that sounds like a good idea, and in fact one we support, that should not be come from the fund that is going to fund the response, the cleanup. Okay. It should come from a separate fund.
Okay, Mark, I wish we could spend more time with you.
Just one more thing is that now, if you're going to do the job, if you're going to take all the cholesterol out, take it all out. There's a lot of little places that, and the state has recently addressed that question. That's what my point was, is that they have to come back and look at these pockets along the shoreline.
Okay.
It was in the paper. You can. It was in the Post Star. It's an issue.
Okay, thanks again.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Joanne in Eckerd. Okay, Joanne, you're on.
Yes, hello, Dr. Chartok. I want to thank you for the program and for the wonderful, wonderful Riverkeeper people who are carrying on Pete's dream of a clean Hudson. I just want, and it's also appropriate because all of the anti-frack groups from all over the state are going to be coming to Mr. Cuomo's State of the State at 11:30 to rally to say thank you to him for future ban on drilling. But I think it's a danger of people becoming complacent and think the broader issues of fracking of gas and oil, it's all over and it's settled. I want your guests to talk about things like AIM, the Algonquin incremental pipeline, the 42-inch pipeline going right next, a few hundred feet from the Indian Point with all its radioactive waste on the fault, about the Pilgrim pipeline, about the CPV gas-fired power plant in Orange County that will be putting wastewater into the Rockhill, which is a tributary of the Hudson, of the LNG terminal off Jones Beach.
Hey, Joanne, only because there are five people behind you, we want to, I think you've done a terrific job of starting us off on that. So let's go right now to Kate Hudson, who might have something to say about this. Kate?
That certainly covers a broad number of issues. And I can tell you about Pilgrim Pipeline, because it's something that I've been working on, and John can speak to some of the other infrastructure projects that were mentioned by the caller. Pilgrim Pipeline is a bi-directional oil pipeline that is proposed to run from Albany down alongside the thruway, if they can get alongside the thruway, and into New Jersey. And it has all the risks of and potential environmental impacts of any pipeline in its construction. It's going to have to cross every major tributary to the Hudson River in terms of construction. It's going to have to cross the aqueduct that carries drinking water from the Catskill watershed down to New York City. In addition to which, once constructed, it has the risks of a pipeline spill like the one we just saw in Montana today.
Sure.
And so, therefore, we are trying to work with local groups who are starting to push back against the construction of this pipeline.
Captain John.
Yes, but it's the caller lists a bunch of very urgent issues that are planned issues. And we have them all on our radar, and we will engage as our resources allow. And believe me, there's more coming at us right now than there was 5 or 6 years ago. The thing that's important to remember, that the crude oil issue is not a planned transport of product. It's happening today. One or two barges holding 4 million gallons a day go down the river. 2 to 4 trains go down the Hudson Valley carrying 3 million gallons each right along the shoreline, and a ship does a round trip to New Brunswick, Canada with 9 million gallons every week. And so we are, as we're often in the position, and the environmental community is often in the position, of having to go to the biggest fire first. And so we're very eager to influence this issue, because it's live today. As we speak, barges and oil are moving.
Yeah, and Kate, you've got three lawyers, I understand, working with you. Is that right?
I have two lawyers working for me, and the Hudson River program that is also engaged has four lawyers.
And so we're talking tiny, really tiny compared to the incredible resources of the people who our caller Joanne was talking about. Joanne, thanks for being here for us today.
Well,
appreciate
thank you so much for what you've done, and let's keep the river with the vision of Pete Seeger. And we don't need any of the fossil fuels. There's going to be fossil fuel divestment days on a national level on February 13th and 14th under the auspices of Food and Water Watch. And New York has the best water in the country right now, and we've got to keep it. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Okay, let's go to John in Glenmont. John in Glenmont, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd like to make a comment, something I think that's been off the radar screen here as far as local politicians in Albany and that. I know that... you know, there's been discussions about, you know, the trains in the Port of Albany, and then they want to do this heating of oil. Well, if you ever drive along 787, which I do all frequently, and into the port, the first row of rail cars, tankers, are all, you know, normal. They have all their hatches closed. But then when you get to all the other rows, as you get toward the riverside, away from the road, they're all open. All the hatches are open, venting out all these fumes and stuff. And it's like that all the time. And, you know, it's like, it's okay because, you know, people that live down there, you know, you shouldn't have a problem breathing all that stuff. But there's plenty of other stuff, too, they're breathing. You know, it's kind of a non-attainment area when it comes to good air quality anyway because of the, you know, the higher kind of plateau across Albany and then this drop down by the river. And when air blows across there, it kind of swirls around and you know, locks in. And a lot of times there's no air movement.
John, I don't want to give you the rush. It's just that there's so many people behind you. Hold on. Stay right there. Anybody want to talk to John's foot? John?
I think we should split this. We did do a surveillance from our boat using a custom infrared spectrum camera that was designed to look for petroleum vapors, which show up as visible images on this camera. And we did not see a problem. Now, that's my limited experience. Kate has worked with the local community and the environmental justice issues, and she can address the second half.
Kate?
I did want to say, and I don't know if people are familiar with the Ezra Prentice homes that are right in Albany in the South End, but this community is so close to the trains, you can reach out and touch them. The playground is right over a fence from the park trains. And the impact that this has had, this increase in crude oil traffic on this environmental justice community is tremendous. And one of the things that we have been working very hard, we actually sued the state DEC with them to challenge DEC's decision that there didn't need to be an environmental review before Global was granted the permit that would allow them to heat the heavy crude oil. That is now in litigation right now, so they haven't granted that permit, but it's still on the table.
You said heat the heavy crude oil. Many of us haven't a clue what that means.
What it means is there are many different kinds of crude, but we're basically dealing with two kinds of crude. The crude that's coming through the Port of Albany now primarily is called Bakken sweet and light crude. That is exactly what people have said. It's very flammable. It's very explosive. It's very gaseous. On the other end of the spectrum, there is tar sands heavy crude that comes from Canada. That is so heavy that it cannot be pumped from the train cars into the vessels, particularly in the wintertime, without being heated. And that is what the Global Terminal Company in Albany was seeking permission to do, was to be able to set up heaters to heat those train cars so they could transload. And it is one of the things that we want to make sure never happens on the Hudson River. John can tell you what a disaster it would be if we had a tar sands heavy crude spill on the Hudson River.
John, very quickly, because we got a lot of people.
Yeah, so the Bakken oil that's moving through is a floating light oil, and it's referred to as duck paint when it spills. It's the kind of oil that coats shoreline and habitat and creatures on the surface. heavy crude, like tar sands crude, sinks. And so whereas the spill on the Mississippi of Bakken, 35,000 gallons spilled, 96 gallons only recovered.
Wow.
That was the floating oil. With tar sands, it goes to the bottom, it moves along with the current, and recovery is totally impossible.
So I know this is a naive question, but based on what Kate had just said, if you granted the heating to the tar sands oil, and you had these heaters, would not there be the potential for the other oil to explode if it got anywhere near the heating?
I don't know. Well, the Bakken and the tar sands will not be together.
Yeah.
And I don't have an answer. I don't think that the tar sands has the volatility.
But aren't those cars sitting near each other?
Well, the heating facility is a discrete
it's
facility.
It's a discrete unit, and they would actually bring only the cars carrying the tar sands into the building.
That's
that
the
would
unit.
Heat the cars. It doesn't, you know, they
yeah.
heat the whole cars.
Right.
But, you know, having said that, the risks
knows.
That, you know, that still
okay.
are there.
Very good. Let's see. We did John. So let's go to Bill in Woodstock. Okay, Bill in Woodstock, you're on.
Hi. I live in Lake Hill, and there's a proposal by Niagara Bottling Company to build a plant in Ulster, New York, and take Kingston's water, which is actually up from Woodstock at Cooper Lake. And I wanted to have your opinion about this whole issue now that, you know, we know that they're going to discharge 340,000 gallons of wastewater into the Esopus a day. So we wanted to hear your opinion about this. We know it's, I don't believe there's enough water that it could bottle. They want to bottle 1.7 million gallons a day, I think it is.
Okay, Kate.
This is an issue that Riverkeeper is working on, specifically the watershed program, because we are very concerned that the impacts of this plant could have on the lower Esopus, which is a tributary to the Hudson River. We're also concerned that the water that would be sold to the bottling plant would come from the New York City drinking watershed.
Yeah.
And what we have done is we have joined with local advocacy groups, Kingston Citizens, who have their own website up on the issue. And we have insisted that the town of Ulster, which is the permitting agency, conduct a full environmental review and require the applicant to prepare a full environmental impact statement. And we will be monitoring that process and encouraging the public to be very engaged on it.
Okay. Thank you for your time on this issue, because I just want to make viewers or listeners aware of this. You know, more people aware of this, the better. It's privatization of our limited resources, and I think it's a bad idea.
Absolutely agree.
I actually live on the stream that feeds the lake, and I believe there's not enough water to go around. Monitoring station has said that, you know, that the Ashokan Watershed Conference, they've mentioned we're getting more storms, not necessarily more rain, and we can't control the amount of rain or predict the amount of rains coming in these storms. They're unpredictable. It's deluge and droughts. And they can't capture the deluge.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Lee in Ulster. Okay, Lee, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
My question is actually about the financial possibility of forcing large escrows on the transportation companies themselves. That ties up enough capital that maybe it doesn't make sense for these people to continue transporting this material. Is that an avenue that anybody would consider?
Kate?
There are both federal and state laws that apply to the financial assurance that that companies who operate terminal facilities and storage facilities in the state of New York are required to meet. Unfortunately, they are very, very underfinanced. Under federal law, a company operating a terminal only has to have $350 million, that's the most it could be required to demonstrate in terms of financial assurance. Under state law, the state cannot require more than that $350 million. And in fact, the New York State Department of DEC is authorized to require less than $350 million down to $8 million to demonstrate the financial capability to cover a crude disaster. We know that that's completely inadequate, and that is unfortunately something that we need to go to the state legislature to try and get changed.
So what's the motivation for that, for keeping it so low?
I would say the motivation is that the industry, the companies that would be required to be exposed in that way and have insurance policies, liability insurance policies that would cover the potential loss, have done a better job of lobbying state and federal government.
I wonder how that happens. Okay. Listen, Lee, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome.
Okay. Let's go to David. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. So if your name is David or Catherine or Miriam, stay right there. We'll be right back with you.
Comes from Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com. Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, Megan Mayhew Bergman presents Almost Famous Women, Saturday, January 24th, 7 p.m., Northshire.com. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs. Massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com. And Epic 18 Vermont Artisans, Manchester Center, an artisan-owned and operated cooperative craft gallery honoring handmade traditions and contemporary design. epochvermont.com.
We're back. Wonderful. Okay, we go to David in New Paltz. David, we're coming around the curve here. Let's go.
Well, the Shokan Reservoir flows into the Esopus Creek, and the Esopus Creek goes into the Hudson, and barges from Saudi Arabia have been offloading their oil in Albany and have been loading up with water from the Esopus Creek. And it's reported that they're getting more for the water sold in Saudi Arabia than they are for the oil in Albany.
Okay, we go now to John, Captain John.
Yeah, we would love to know about this, but we have no evidence of any of this activity. The oil that's coming up the river, the petroleum product coming up the river, is all refined product coming from the New Jersey refinery. So diesel, heating oil, gasoline, and that amount, the amount that's coming up, is driven by the market in upper New York State and Vermont. The oil, the crude oil that's going down, that's being moved in the Hudson, is being moved downriver because it's arriving by train from North Dakota. We are not aware at all of any oil coming from Saudi Arabia to Albany, and it doesn't make sense because in Albany there aren't any refineries. That's why they're moving the Bakken crude oil out of Albany to the refineries, which are on the coastline. Years ago, there was an issue of water being taken from the Hyde Park area down to refineries in the Caribbean, and that was one of Riverkeeper's early cases. And we monitor, you know, vessels. We look at discharges from vessels. But that's a thing of the past as far as we know.
But as far as you say, as far as we know, if anybody has any proof of anything, Riverkeeper wants to hear about it, right?
Yep. Yep.
And what about the hydroelectric that's cheaply produced in Canada coming down the Hudson River underwater to by cable to New York City? Why couldn't the upstate area benefit from that low-cost energy as well?
Yeah, I can't really speak to that because it's driven by market forces. I can tell you that we struggled mightily at Riverkeeper over the issue of power from hydro coming down the Hudson Valley to the metro area. And one of the drivers in our partial agreement, you know, we spent a lot of time, a lot of staff time, years worth, mitigating the impacts to the Hudson from the project. One of the drivers was that to close the Indian Point power plant, there has to be available replacement power, and one of the sources was seen to be, turns out it's not essential, it's not a deal breaker, but to sell it to New York State government, the cable project seemed to be an integral component. And the risk to not just lower New York State from Indian Point and the Hudson River exceeds anything we're discussing here today. So closing Indian Point is our most labor-intensive effort. And, you know, they use 2.2 billion gallons of water a day at Indian Point to condense their internal steam. And they're scrubbing 1 billion fish a year out of the Hudson and have for decades and decades, 24/7, 365 days a year. And an accident at Indian Point that would be just a calamity for the region. 20 million people live within 50 miles of Manhattan. So the cable project with Canadian Power, hydropower, was far from ideal, but it was seen as a piece of a much larger and an enormously significant battle.
David,
who owns the electricity in the water from hydroelectric plants to be built in the United States?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. I know that the power's projected to come down the Champlain Express cable is Hydro-Québec.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. Okay, and let's go to Catherine in Williamstown. Catherine in Williamstown, you're on.
Hello, hello. I'm a toxicologist, and my area of expertise is dealing with oil and oil spills.
Excellent.
And about the most productive thing you can do now, besides what you're doing, is to make sure that you have abundant sources of data that are current and updated regularly on about the area that would be affected in the event of a spill. I worked on the Exxon Valdez oil spill and did research there for 8 years, and one of the big problems that we had was the dearth of data of before spill. And so you get species abundance, species diversity, the richness of things, the biochemistry. If you've been around or dealing with oil spills, what you look at is the EROD or CYP1A levels in fish. You look at all of these metrics, all of them, and you have as much data as you can get in advance, the chemical, the biochemical, and the ecological. Because if it doesn't happen now, and if we keep on with oil, and it looks like we will, it's just a numbers game at that point.
Okay, listen, Catherine, make sure I have your name at some point. Alan at WAMC.org. I'm sure we'd like to use your expertise here at WAMC, okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
Thank you very
it.
Much.
All right. Let's go to Miriam in New Paltz. Miriam, you're on.
Hi, and yes, please get that last caller on as a guest.
You bet.
I want to learn more. Thank you very much for having this show. And a shout-out to some of your other callers, including the fellow from Save Cooper Lake. I'm calling in reference to the Pilgrim Pipeline. I live in New Paltz, where I'm proud to say both the town and village have joined other Ulster County communities in passing resolutions against it. Tomorrow night, Wednesday the 21st, Plattekill and Saugerties are considering similar resolutions at their town board meeting.
Mm.
So that's a heads-up for the people there. But on a... on a different level, since it's the fifth anniversary of Citizens United, it's an FYI that the two executives from Koch Industries who started Pilgrim Pipeline did come from the Koch brothers' enterprises with their rather unsavory safety record with pipelines. The Pilgrim Pipeline people have been in Ulster County and perhaps elsewhere in the Mid-Hudson Valley representing themselves through rather intimidating tactics to landowners attempting to get on their land to get rights to survey. They're nice until you say no, then they get nasty. They don't have the right of eminent domain, but people should be aware of their bullying tactics. There are people who have signed because they figured that their lawyers could beat them up.
Okay, Miriam, is there a question here? Because there are
a lot
of people.
The question is there a coordinated... The proposed pipeline would run from Linden, New Jersey, up to Albany. Is there a coordinating group Is it Riverkeeper? And if not, is there another group coordinating resistance and public education about the Pilgrim Pipeline?
I can answer that question. We have been working with at least two groups, Citizens for Safe Energy and Protecting Our Waters. We have appeared at presentations that occurred at SUNY New Paltz several weeks ago, and more recently in Saugerties. Over 100 people showed up last Saturday. And so we are very, I think, pretty well organized with respect to Ulster County. I am concerned, though, that there is less activity in terms of informing landowners of what their rights are going on in Greene County and Rockland County, Orange County. New Jersey, Sierra Club, and Food and Water Watch have been very active on this issue. And I agree with you that one of the things that we're trying to get out there is we're trying to let landowners know they can say no. And the company has no right to go on their property without their permission. And if they do, they're trespassing.
Okay, but Miriam's base question, which is a very good one, is if one wanted to get involved in this, is there an overriding group that you would go to? Would it be Riverkeeper?
You could certainly reach out to us, and I would put you in touch with the other people who are being more active. Riverkeeper is in a support mode. We are not in a leading mode on this fight.
Okay.
What are those two groups again? Protecting Our Waters, and what was the other?
Protecting Our Waters and Citizens for Safe Energy.
Miriam, thank you. We had so many people behind you, I don't know what to do here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, very quickly, I have got a whole bunch of people who couldn't get in, and I'm going to ask you questions. I want real short answers on this. Good afternoon. My question is simply about the progress of Hudson River cleanup so far. Can we now safely eat the fish in the Hudson River? That's from Mark.
No.
Okay.
Well, it depends where you are and what species. So some fish are...
Let's say shad.
Shad, you can't eat because they've been totally protected because their populations are so low, but their flesh is clean. So that's because they spend their lives at sea. So the fish that spend their lives in the river, and especially fish that
like
eel, that are bioaccumulating toxins, those are the worst. So it's very complex. New York State Department of Health has health guidelines on consuming Hudson River fish. Consult that. And you'll get a lot of information.
And by the way, women of childbearing age, basically the answer is no.
And should anybody swim in the Hudson River?
So we've got programs going back to 2006 where we've been sampling for fecal-indicating bacteria. To look at swimming quality against federal guidelines. And we just finished our 2014 season. 23% of our samples in the estuary and in a number of the tributaries failed to meet those guidelines. So if people are interested, they can go to riverkeeper.org. On the top banner, there's a water quality tab, and there's data going back to 2006, some places only 2008, which will help New Yorkers make educated decisions on water quality in the various areas that they use in the estuary and on tributaries.
Now, Jeff has a question, which is desalinization. Why can't we desalinate if there's plenty we could do with it? And if we legally block Nestle and others from using our aquifers, I'm sure they'd figure out how to make desalinization profitable.
A desalinization plant was just put on hold. It was being promoted by United Water for Rockland County. And a citizens group rose up and said, we don't need this, we don't want this. There is a tremendous amount of energy consumption involved with desalinization.
Yes, there is. And Peter wants to know why, looking at Mordor, why we'd want to risk a leak like that. Well, he's sort of answering his own question, right? Yeah.
I'm confused. What?
Peter, expanding, I'm sorry. Its destroyed landscape has been described as looking just like Mordor. And why would we want to risk a leak from that? The answer is why indeed.
Why would we?
So this is really more of an editorial than a question.
Right.
Who we love, by the way. Okay, so now back to the phones. Let's go to Abigail. Folks, we only have a few seconds now. So Abigail, make it fast.
Hi, Alan. Why don't we, my father said something to me many years ago, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
And you know something? Let's look at solar. We can That's where I go. That's what I would do. Look at solar, be inclusive in as many resources as possible, and really be conscious of not destroying the beauty and the potential that we have.
That's why we have a river keeper. Okay, John?
So you're right on. Solar is coming. I saw in a Sierra Club magazine that just behind petroleum energy development in 2014 was solar. It's coming on strong. Not an energy economist, but I bet you we see part of the reason we're seeing this enormous push to develop traditional fossil fuels is because the industry knows its days are numbered.
Could be. Thank you, Abigail. Let's go to David in Albany. David, really quickly.
Very quick. One, I want the panel to tell us what we can do with our elected officials around here to stop the oil coming into Albany. And then secondly, I want to ask you, do you know of, in fact, a good friend of mine, Richard Grossman, who is the executive director of Greenpeace, started a few organizations. One of them is the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund in Pennsylvania, and they deal with the commons, you know, the water, things like that, that belong to all of us.
Okay, so the question, David, is?
Do you work with them? Do you know of them? Because they have a community bill of rights that they draft up for a lot of states and cities, towns. There's one up in upstate New York that stopped fracking through one of their bill of rights. So do you work with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund in Pennsylvania? And what should we do locally here with our elected officials to have them put pressure to stop this oil coming into Albany?
We have worked with the group in Pennsylvania on fracking issues. We have not engaged with them on crude oil issues, and I'm not sure. It will require some more legal research to know whether or not we can take the same approach with a federally regulated industry like this as opposed to a state-regulated one through local municipal ordinances. And on the first question, there's several things that we would advocate that you do. I would encourage you to go to riverkeeper.org/crude, where we have a whole list of actions that people can take. But certainly we should be asking DEC not to give Global the permit to heat crude oil, to push back, to require a full environmental impact statement. And we should be asking our state legislators to provide more financial protection for New York State citizens.
And you ought to really get going and talk to all of your elected officials. I mean, David, there's not a better way, I'm sure you know this.
Of course.
I know you're asking the question to get people to do that, but you know, you got to vote them out or vote them in, and you got to go to the meetings, and you got to sit there, and you got to yell when you have to.
I just wanted to say one real conundrum, because I've been fighting nukes for
David. I'm so sorry. We have no time.
See you later. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye. Thank you. Let's go to Rachel in Woodstock. Rachel, make it real fast. You only have
real. Rachel, I live in Woodstock, and I've been working on this Niagara bottling proposal for the last several months. And I'm wondering, this is a question for you, Alan. How come I don't hear anything about it on NPR, WAMC?
Well, do you listen all day?
I listen quite a bit, and this is the first time I've heard it mentioned.
Well, you're hearing it today, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Rachel. Okay, and let's go to Lolita. What number is that? Lolita in, is number two. And Lolita in Wilbraham. Go ahead, Lolita.
It's Molita.
Molita, I'm so sorry.
I have a question about the Keystone Pipeline. I've read, and I'm asking, is it true that the Koch brothers own 2 million acres in Alberta, the tar sands, and that they stand to make $100 billion if this Keystone Pipeline goes through?
The answer is, looking at their faces, we don't know the answer to your question, and therefore not wanting to be on the end of that lawsuit from the Koch brothers. We'll let that be and do our homework. Okay, Lolita, I'm so sorry we're out of time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're just about out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in. I mean that. It's a wonderful show. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering weekend and week-long workshops for adults and teens in a farm setting. Registration now open for 2015 classes. Snowfarm.org, Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-mile challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 2nd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. Mohonkpreserve.org for registration. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New York, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com, and HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting The Complete History of America, Abridged. Weekends, February 13th through March 1st at the Spa Little Theater. Saratoga Springs State Park, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Drop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Dan Goldstein. Did a terrific job. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok, and we're out of here.